Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Francis Alonso reporting. A suicide bomber attacked a UN barracks in northern Mali Wednesday, according to the United Nations, killing three civilians and wounding 16 people, including several peacekeepers. The militant was attempting to drive into a camp by using the UN MINUSMA's peacekeeping mission in Onsongo in the northern region of Gao when the explosions went off. The attack left 9 injured, 2 seriously, among the peacekeepers from the Niger contingent. In addition, the explosion has also killed 3 civilians. Seven civilians were also injured, according to the statement. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani says Iran is in talks to reach a final nuclear agreement with 6 world powers and not with U.S. lawmakers. Mr. Rouhani's remarks Wednesday were an apparent reaction to developments Tuesday in Washington, where President Barack Obama pledged to sign a bill that would subject the agreement to a U.S. congressional review. He made the speech to thousands of Iranians in the city of Rasht. On Wednesday, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said he's confident about reaching a final agreement with Iran.
Yesterday, there was a compromise reached in Washington regarding congressional input. We are confident about our ability for the president to negotiate an agreement and to do so with the ability to make the world safer. And again, every partner here has been absolutely critical to our ability to be able to get where we are today.
Kerry spoke before a meeting of Group of 7 foreign ministers in Germany that was to include the discussion on the negotiations. VOA News. A former star player in the U.S. National Football League has been convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison without parole in a shooting incident nearly 2 years ago.
Aaron Hernandez with murder. What say you, Madam Foreperson? Is the defendant not guilty, guilty of murder in the first degree, or guilty of murder in the second degree?
Guilty of murder in the first degree.
A jury in the U.S. state of Massachusetts found Aaron Hernandez guilty, as you heard Wednesday, in the case involving the slaying of the 27-year-old Odin Lloyd, who was dating the sister of Hernandez's fiance. Prosecutors said during the trial that Hernandez and 2 friends drove Lloyd to an industrial park where they shot him dead before dawn in June of 2013. The Islamic State group launched an offensive in Iraq's western Anbar province Wednesday, capturing 3 villages near the capital of Ramadi. That's where fierce clashes were underway between the extremists and government troops, according to residents. The dawn push by IS has seized villages which had been under government control until now, according to residents. Fighting has also been taking place on the eastern edges of Ramadi. President Obama, meanwhile, pledged $205 million in new humanitarian aid to Iraq on Tuesday. He lauded the visiting Iraqi prime minister.
I think both Sunni leaders and Kurdish leaders feel that they are heard in the halls of power, that they are participating in governance in Baghdad. And although there is the natural back and forth that exists in any democracy, Prime Minister Abadi has kept true to his commitments to reach out to them and to respond to their concerns.
Taiwan says it's disappointed that China rejected its bid to be a founding member of a new regional development bank. Ralph Jennings reports.
Taiwan expressed disappointment Tuesday that China had declined its application to join the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, a regional lender being set up by Beijing with international funding. The government in Taipei said joining regional organizations was its right. China says the bank, to be launched later this year, has 57 countries approved as founding members and will have authorized capital of $100 billion, of which China is expected to contribute about half. Experts say China stuck to its principle of letting only sovereign states join the bank as founding members. Beijing sees self-ruled Taiwan as part of its territory, not as a separate country. Ralph Jennings for VOA News, Taipei.
The European Union has filed a complaint accusing Google of abusing its dominant position in internet searches. Analysts say the EU could fine Google as much as $6 billion and require the company to make changes in how it operates. I'm Francis Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The Kenyan government has issued a 10-day amnesty to the youths who have joined Somalia Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab. The call came as investigators revealed some of the attackers at Garissa University College were Kenyan youths trained in Somalia.
That's Mohammed Yusuf reporting from Nairobi. We will have full details on this story coming up. Also, Malawi's information minister says his government will repatriate its citizens from South Africa after anti-foreigner violence in the city of Durban. At least one person was killed and several others wounded in Guinea's capital, Conakry, as police battle to control violent demonstrations against the government. And international rights agencies say 2015 is shaping up to be the deadliest year for migrants crossing the Mediterranean Sea. We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Uganda, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Malawi Information Minister Kondwani Nankrumah says his government will repatriate its citizens from South Africa following anti-foreigner violence in the city of Durban. Police fired rubber bullets at armed mobs yesterday in an effort to control the violence. At least five foreigners have died so far. One victim was 14 years old. An Ethiopian was killed earlier in the week after his shop was burned. Heavily armed riot police in riot gear stood by today as a Burundian resident of Durban told Reuters that the black people from foreign Africa are being burned alive. Durban media report about 5,000 foreigners have fled their homes in the last 2 weeks. Malawi's information minister has announced that the first Malawians will be returning home this weekend. Zimbabwe has also condemned the attacks, but no other African nation has yet offered to repatriate its citizens. In the midst of high unemployment, South Africans have turned their anger on some of the thousands who have migrated to South Africa since the end of apartheid. There are more than 5 million foreigners living in the country. The minister also called on the African Union and the Southern African Development Community to intervene to protect foreigners. KwaZulu-Natal province has asked for additional police to prevent the violence from escalating. The ruling African National Congress Party released a statement saying South Africans should hang their heads in shame in the face of these misguided and misplaced assaults. In Guinea, at least one person was killed and several others wounded in the capital, Conakry, as police battle to control violent anti-government demonstrations. Opposition parties called the protests to pressure the government of President Alpha Condé to hold local elections ahead of a presidential vote, as laid out in a 2013 agreement among Guinea's rival political factions. The government does not recognize the clause on the order of voting and has set the presidential election for October 11th, with local elections due early next year. The government has called for talks to resolve the deadlock, but opposition leaders have ruled out any dialogue until the election schedule is changed. Well, international rights agencies say 2015 is shaping up to be the deadliest year for migrants crossing the Mediterranean Sea. In the latest tragedy, the human rights group Save the Children reports an estimated 400 people, many of them children, lost their lives in recent days while making the dangerous crossing from Libya to Italy. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The month of April is only half over, and yet it has been extraordinary in terms of the number of people rescued at sea. Official figures indicate the Italian Coast Guard has picked up more than 7,000 migrants between April 10th and 13th. Save the Children says some 450 of them are children, 317 unaccompanied by an adult. Joel Millman, a spokesman for the International Organization for Migration, says so far about 8,000 people have been rescued in April. These numbers, he says, indicate the 2015 migrant smuggling season is in full swing.
We're on pace to be well ahead of last year's totals for all migrant arrivals from Africa into Italy. We're on pace to be five times the rate of fatalities. Past weekend, we passed 500 deaths on the Mediterranean of migrants leaving Africa. This time last year, there were 47, although by the end of April 2014, that had grown to 96. So we're at least five times the first 4 months of 2014's rate.
Milman says the tide of migration from Libya toward Italy is growing at a far more alarming and more deadly rate this year than last. He says many more migrants are fleeing Libya and making the precarious journey across the sea to escape the violent and crime-ridden conditions in that country.
A lot of what we see are people who are part of the traditional workforce that come up through West Africa to work in Libya, but because it's difficult to remit money home and because there's just so much common crime in the streets of cities like Tripoli right now, they're afraid that they can't keep their money, they can't stay safe, so they're seeking a way to get out on these ships.
The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees says at least 3,500 people drowned while attempting to cross the Mediterranean from North Africa in 2014. International humanitarian agencies predict that record number of deaths will be surpassed this year. They are calling on the European Union to step up action to stop this intolerable loss of life. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Libyan Prime Minister Abdullah Al-Thani reportedly is asking Russia for help in getting a weapons embargo lifted for the army. He says Libya wants Russian support in restoring state institutions and security. The internationally recognized government is battling a rival government for control of the country. Meanwhile, Reuters reports that forces supporting the internationally recognized government conducted airstrikes today near Tripoli. An army spokesman says planes attacked the Matiga airport and other targets. Also today, Libyan peace talks were scheduled to start in Morocco. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 680 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on 13 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Malawi's information minister says his government will repatriate its citizens from South Africa in the wake of anti-foreign violence in the city of Durban. At least one person was killed and several others wounded in Guinea's capital, Conakry, as police battle to control violent demonstrations against the government. And international rights agencies say 2015 is shaping up to be the deadliest year for migrants crossing the Mediterranean Sea. And for the latest developments and more news, visit our website at www.voanews.com. In more news around the continent, the Kenyan government has issued a 10-day amnesty to the youths who have joined Somali Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab. The call came as investigators revealed some of the attackers at Garissa University College were Kenyan youths trained in Somalia. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
As Kenya tries to come to terms with the terror event that took place 2 weeks ago at Garissa University College, where more than 140 people were killed, Kenyan officials have issued amnesty to youths who have joined Al-Shabaab and are willing to denounce violence. Interior Ministry spokesman Mwenda Njoka tells VOA his government has come up with a program that targets youths willing to reintegrate into society.
We didn't have a systematic program of rehabilitating, and others would come. We know they are here, but they fear being coming out in the open for fear of prosecution. So what we are trying to do is to encourage them to come out. We work with them and see how they can get them back as useful members of society.
The country was shocked when investigators revealed some of the attackers were Kenyan youths who joined Al-Shabaab some years ago. One of them was the son of a local chief in one of the Mandera County towns was hit by terror attacks in the past 4 months. Kenya also offered amnesty to radical youths in 2012. Months after Kenyans sent troops to Somalia in October 2011, the government reported dozens surrendered and have been helping authorities with information about the presence of the militant group in Somalia and Kenya. The United Nations Monitoring Group for Somalia and Eritrea estimates more than 500 Kenyans have joined al-Shabaab. Njoka knows rehabilitation centres will be created to provide help for them.
Some of them have gone through very traumatizing processes in the process of being radicalized. So what you'd want to do is to do something to reverse that process so that they are engaged today. We work with them. If they are, those ones are looking for jobs, we see how we can be able to help them. Others who may be able to join colleges, we see how we can assist them.
Kenyan authorities insist they're serious with the offer. The amnesty ends April 24th. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
A new report says many countries are failing to improve economic growth and living standards because of what's called digital poverty. The World Economic Forum has released its Global Information Technology Report for 2015. It says the full economic and social benefits of the Internet are only available to a minority of the world's population. It adds that many countries are failing to implement basic reforms that could increase productivity and boost their economies. Cherry Geiger is a senior economist for the World Economic Forum and co-editor of the report. From London, he spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua.
So digital poverty is the inability to use IT, either due to the lack of access or due to the lack of skills. It is really a form of poverty because without digital access, without digital skills, you cannot tap into the huge potential of technology to improve your lives and create opportunities.
Is this a new way to measure the world's economy?
It's not a new way, but we believe that technology has become a key enabler of development, and this should be taken seriously. It's not just a luxury or something you do after having addressed other supposedly more pressing issues. Technology can really, really accelerate development in low-income economies and more advanced economies. And we believe that this should be taken really seriously. And the truth is that everybody believes that technology is everywhere, but it is not. And we're missing out on huge opportunities.
Now, the report says Singapore is at the top of the list when it comes to leveraging its technology for social and economic impact. Can you explain how Singapore has done that?
Yes, so in our study, we look at the many drivers of this capacity to leverage IT for competitiveness and for well-being in general. And in the case of Singapore, those drivers all point in the right direction. So we're looking at education, we're looking at the digital ecosystem, you know, the framework conditions for innovation to flourish. We looked at the actual usage, we look at how the government is using technology to enable e-government and e-citizenship. And the entire economy is geared towards knowledge and information and innovation-driven. That makes Singapore really like the top of its class.
What are some of the other top countries?
In the top 10, you know, 7 European countries, mostly the Nordics, so Finland, Sweden, Norway, rank very high. We also observe the rise of the Baltics. So the smaller countries like Estonia and Lithuania and Latvia are also very strong at building a digital economy. Switzerland is also strong, the U.S. in number 7, and Japan number 10. So European and 3 other advanced economies in the top 10. And more generally, we observe a very strong correlation between income level and performance index.
So who's at the bottom?
So we continue to see low-income countries at the bottom of the ranking. We have 143 economies. The bottom of the ranking is occupied by mostly low-income economies, mostly from sub-Saharan Africa. We do observe some success stories amid the bleak picture in these regions. You have countries like Mauritius, you have countries like Rwanda, you have smaller countries in Latin America, for example, Costa Rica or Panama, doing quite well in our ranking, so punching above their weight when it comes to building digital economy.
So does the report make any recommendations as to what countries should be doing in the future?
The report highlights a number of solutions and recommendations on how to address this digital poverty and really bring the IT revolution to the whole world. It's a mix of private sector actions and government interventions. The government has a huge role to play in creating enabling conditions for the private sector to enter the market and offer services and deploy the infrastructure. They have a huge role to play, the government, again, to build the skill set of the population. So it's a combination of factors. There is no one-size-fits-all solution, but the report highlights a number of solutions for all the countries, not just the low-income countries.
Now, I understand this digital divide is not only between countries, but can happen within a country itself.
Even in the most advanced economies, we do observe a widening gap between those who have access to technology and have the skills to use it to the full potential, and the others who, because of their age or because of their location or because of their lack of education or simply lack of money to pay for IT, cannot take full benefit of ICT. And this widening digital divide within countries is also a concern that should be addressed, because if it is addressed, then you can really use ICT to create more inclusive societies and support inclusive growth.
Cherry Geiger is a senior economist for the World Economic Forum. From London, he spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua. Minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Well, almost 2 million children were expected to return to school yesterday in Sierra Leone after the government shut down public education 9 months ago during the Ebola health crisis. The opening of more than 8,000 schools marks a turning point in a nation that has lost more than 3,800 lives in the year-long epidemic. However, families in Sierra Leone remain concerned for their children's health. After the first day of school, many classrooms are not full. Schools report only 20 to 50% of students returned to school yesterday. UNICEF is supporting the government's educational transition by training 9,000 teachers on Ebola safety, supplying schools with 24,000 hand-washing stations. School kits are being distributed to all the students, and some 17,000 solar radios are being given to less privileged children in rural communities. Since October 2014, the government has run daily emergency radio education programs to allow children to continue learning at home. Liberia had reopened schools earlier this year. The World Health Organization is recommending longer safe sex precautions for Ebola survivors. The advice comes after a woman whose boyfriend survived Ebola 6 months ago died of the virus. Health officials previously cautioned survivors against sex for 3 months, even though there is no evidence the virus has been transmitted to a partner in semen. Dr. Natalie Bruchet, a WHO medical officer, says the agency has changed its recommendations to go beyond 3 months until more information is available. In India, hundreds of thousands have joined a public campaign to ensure equal access to the internet. From New Delhi, Anjana Pasricha reports on the impassioned debate engulfing the country on what is called net neutrality.
The controversy heated up after one of the country's main telecom providers launched a new marketing platform, Airtel Zero, where internet businesses could pay to have users browse their sites for free. This triggered a nationwide backlash from those who feared that this could deny equal access to the internet. They are demanding that the internet remain a level playing field with all data getting equal treatment, whether it is a student's blog or an online company with deep pockets. Celebrities, professionals, entrepreneurs, and students are among the tens of thousands who have signed up for an online campaign, Save the Internet. Petitions are being sent at a furious pace to the telecom regulator, which invited public comments last month on various proposals, such as allowing telecom companies to charge for services like Skype and YouTube. One of the persons behind the campaign to ensure net neutrality, Kiran Jonalagadda, in Bangalore, has been taken aback by the overwhelming response.
Like 400,000 users have on their own copy-pasted an email from our website and mailed it to try from their own computers. This is not an automated script. There is nothing going on from our servers. You know, people are doing this by themselves on their own computers. That's incredible. We didn't think they would do it.
The strident public criticism on the issue has already had an impact. One of the country's biggest online retailers, Flipkart, said on Tuesday that it had scrapped discussions with Airtel Zero on giving users free access to its app. Flipkart announced its decision after some angry supporters of net neutrality denounced the company, saying it would get an unfair advantage over its competitors. Some users even threatened to boycott the online retailer. Supporters of allowing telecoms to give preferential free access to internet sites say providers need the funds to expand infrastructure and net coverage in countries like India, where broadband access is still limited. Opponents say such practices allow for preferential treatment for some websites over others, creating a disadvantage for upstart websites that would inhibit innovation. Pranesh Prakash at the Bangalore-based Centre for Internet and Society supports net neutrality. However, he says under certain conditions, companies could pay for customers using their data.
They anyway have to pay money for using data. Right now, what some companies are offering to do is to not only pay money for their own data use, but also to pay money for the customer's data use. And that can be anti-competitive. Okay, for instance, if there's an exclusive deal or if the terms of the deal are not transparent. But just the fact that a company is offering to pay for someone for its customers' data does not by itself make it anti-competitive. For instance, toll-free numbers are not considered anti-competitive by anyone.
The government says it will wait for a report from a 6-member committee due in May before it takes a position on the issue. But net users hope the government is leaning toward net neutrality. Earlier this week, Minister for Communications and Information Technology, Ravi Shankar Prasad, called the internet one of the finest creations of the human mind.
It is the property of the entire human race, not of any country or of any society. Net, to become truly global, must have integral link with the local. And when we talk of digital inclusion, it is equally important. It must be available to those who are underprivileged and all the margins.
India is one of the world's biggest internet markets after the United States and China, with an estimated 180 million users. It is not the only country to debate net neutrality. It has also been a subject of intense discussion in the United States and Europe. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
This is Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and it's 28 minutes past the hour on the Voice of America.
Message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria kills thousands of people each year, but there are some simple things you can do to protect your family. If you can, put screens in your windows. A simple screen can keep disease-carrying mosquitoes out of your home. If you go outside, wear light-colored clothing and long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. After it rains, empty all containers of standing water. The water in just one discarded tire can become a breeding ground for thousands of mosquitoes. Make sure your home is clear of debris and anything that holds water, including discarded cans, water containers, and rubbish. Empty containers that livestock drink from regularly so that mosquitoes cannot breed there.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa. Go!
What's up, Africa? It's Jackson Vunganyi.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Cape Town.
Can I be upfront with you? That's exactly...
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Malawi's information minister says his government will repatriate its citizens from South Africa following anti-foreigner violence in Durban. At least one person was killed and several others wounded in Guinea's capital, Conakry, as police battle to control violent demonstrations against the government. And international rights agencies say 2015 is shaping up to be the deadliest year for migrants crossing the Mediterranean Sea. Coming up, we'll have music from Uganda and our feature reports. I'm Kim Lewis, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. Of course, it's time now for the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young. Happy Wednesday, Sunny.
Happy Wednesday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand you have lots of football news for us.
Kim, joining us once again on the sunny side of sports from Johannesburg is David Legg, our African football guru. Sporty greetings, David.
Thank you, Sunny.
David, let's kick off on the social media side. The Sunny Side of Sports has a Facebook page, and each week we have an English Premier League football question of the week. And I will put it forth for you this week. Top of the table Chelsea will host third place Manchester United Saturday at Stamford Bridge. David, is there a particular player who you think will be the X factor in this eagerly awaited match?
Sonny, I'm going to go for the Spaniard Mata from Manchester United for two reasons. X factor as in a player with special skills, and also X as in former. And he, of course, is a former Chelsea player, and he's going now back to Stamford Bridge to face his former club. Mata has been in outstanding form lately. I have to very sadly relate that my team, Liverpool, were the victims of his skills, his clinical finishing, just a few weeks ago. Manchester United came to Liverpool, and it was seen as a crucial game towards the Champions League. A reminder to all our Sunnyside Sport listeners, the top three finishers in the English Premier League, they qualify for the group stage of the European Champions League. And the fourth-placed finisher, they go into the qualifying round. So if at all possible, the club wants to finish in the top three, but if not, they want that fourth place. And the thing is, Sonny, it's the most prestigious competition. Many people say, in fact, that the standard of football in the Champions League is much higher than in the World Cup. And I wouldn't disagree with that. Of course, there is a big factor in favor of the Champions League in that when you're playing for your club, you're playing with the same players up to 10 months a year. When you're playing for your national team, you gather every few months or so. And in the case of the World Cup, you gather a couple of weeks before the tournament begins. So you don't have that same teamwork. It's just not humanly possible. So in the English Premier League, although Chelsea at this stage are 7 points ahead and they look certain to win the title with just six rounds left, there's a battle royal going on for second, third and fourth positions. And at the moment, Arsenal have got 66 points. Manchester United have got 65 points. They're in third position. And very significantly, they're 4 points ahead of the defending champions, Manchester City, with 61. Now, it is with some degree of difficulty, Sonny, that I have to say the following. Manchester United hammered Manchester City 4-2 in the Manchester derby at the weekend. Now, as a Liverpool fan, of course, there are various obligations you have, and one of those is you certainly do not support Manchester United. Quite the opposite. In fact, what you do, Sonny, is you support every club that plays against Manchester United. But on the sunny side of sport, objectivity is crucial. And I must say, Manchester United, after falling behind early in the game against Manchester City at Old Trafford, gave a really dominant performance. And among the goal scorers was none other than Mr. X Factor himself, Mata. At one stage, they were, in fact, 4-1 ahead, Manchester City getting a late second goal. But Manchester United won that match, and Manchester City were absolutely nowhere. I wouldn't even say they finished second. They were so far behind Manchester United. And then an interesting twist, Sonny, is that Liverpool, they beat Newcastle United in the Monday match 2-0. And they're now just 4 points behind Manchester City. Now, that's quite a gap with just six rounds left. But Manchester City are in free fall at the moment. They're really going downhill fast. At one stage, they were challenging Chelsea for the title. They're now battling to stay in the top four and just qualify for the Champions League. And for a team that has cost the Qatari owners so much money, for Manchester City not to make the top four and not qualify for Europe would be nothing short of a disaster. But yes, I need to get back to Stamford Bridge. That's a really great game to look forward to at the weekend. And my advice to all our Voice of America listeners around Africa is keep a special eye out for Mata. He's in top form. One goal against City, two goals against Liverpool. He's one to watch.
David, let's stay in Europe. Any recent African goal-scoring highlights in the major European leagues?
Yes, indeed, Sonny. Yannick Bolasie, he's from the Democratic Republic of Congo. He clearly is a listener to the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
And the reason I say that is we complained last week, Sonny, after a lot of red cards and poor performances, that we needed something spectacular from an African footballer in the English Premier League. Well, Yannick Bolasie obviously said to himself, I'll show you guys at the sunny side of sport what I can do. What he did, Sonny, is he took Sunderland apart. In the space of just 12 minutes, he scored three goals, a hat-trick. His first goal since last September, so he's not exactly a prolific scorer. But I know he went out on the field at the Stadium of Light in northeast England, and he said, I'll show David Legg what I'm worth. A great performance by him, Sonny, and a great performance by Crystal Palace. They're really on the up and up. They hammered Sunderland 4-1 away. And that's a Sunderland side desperately fighting to stay in top-class football. An unusual situation for another African star in Europe. It was Sadio Mane of Southampton. He, Sonny, was about to take a penalty kick against Hull City when the vehement protests of the Southampton manager, Ronald Koeman, got the penalty taker changed. He obviously didn't have that much confidence in Mane. Thankfully for the manager, the kick was converted, so he didn't have too much egg on his face. And the Saints, as Southampton are known, went on to win 2-0. If I now switch, Sonny, to Spain, a bittersweet goal, really, from Menucho, the Angolan, for Rayo Vallecano. He scored in the opening minutes his fourth goal of the season in La Liga, but I'm afraid that's as good as it got against Celta Vigo. Celta Vigo responded with six goals of their own, so they hammered Rayo 6-1. So not too many celebrations for that goal from Menucho at the final whistle. A name to watch out for, one we've never mentioned before on the sunny side of sport. It's Thomas Partey, spelled P-A-R-T-E-Y. He's on loan from Atletico Madrid to Almeria, and he scored two goals for Almeria, his first goals in La Liga in a 3-0 victory over Granada. So Thomas Partey, there's a name for us to keep an eye out for. But a name well known to Voice of America listeners is the Nigerian Ikechukwu Uche from Villarreal. He scored his eighth goal of the season for Villarreal in a 1-1 draw against Getafe. Samuel Eto'o did not score for Sampdoria in Italy, but he's earned a new name. He's now called a Martian. And the reason for that, Sonny, is that the president of Sampdoria, a man by the name of Massimo Ferraro, he says he's out of this world. So, in other words, it's from Mars. He's a Martian. So, I guess Samuel Eto'o's been called a lot of names down the years, but there's one, Sonny, I certainly haven't heard before. On a sadder note, in France, Sambou Yatabare, he's a Mali midfielder who plays for Guingamp. He's been a bad boy all season. He's had seven yellow cards. And yes, you've guessed it, Sonny. This weekend, he got a red card, so he's now got a complete set. Happier note, in Germany, another Nigerian who's scoring regularly, it's Anthony Uja from Cologne. He scored his 10th goal of the season, and it helped Cologne beat Hoffenheim by 3-2. So led by Yannick Bolasie, Sonny, much better weekend for the African stars across Europe.
Thanks, David. That's our football guru, David Legg, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg, South Africa. Europe's top club football tournament, the UEFA Champions League, continues Wednesday evening with first leg quarterfinal matches in France and Portugal. In France, Paris Saint-Germain is hosting star-studded Barcelona, the four-time European champions, who feature Neymar, Lionel Messi, and Luis Suarez, among others. And in Portugal, Porto is at home against five-time European champion Bayern Munich. In results Tuesday, Atletico Madrid and defending champion Real Madrid battled to a scoreless draw in the first leg of their quarterfinal, a rematch of the 2014 final. Atletico's Slovenian goalkeeper Jan Oblak made a series of outstanding saves to preserve the draw. And in Tuesday's other match, Juventus beat visiting Monaco 1-0 in Turin, Italy. Chilean midfielder Arturo Vidal converted a penalty kick in the 57th minute. Joining us now with more sports news is Marco Uma.
We begin with football. Nigeria overpowered hosts Seychelles 10-1 at the start of the Africa Beach Soccer Championships in Roche, Cayman on Tuesday. In the other Group A encounter, Ivory Coast and Egypt drew 2-2 in open play before Ivory Coast edged the Egyptians 3-1 in the ensuing post-match penalty shootout. In Group B, defending champions Senegal beat Morocco 7-3 as Madagascar outplayed Ghana 9-4. The finalists at this contest qualify for the FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup in Portugal and later this year. Turning to athletics, Athletics Kenya has suspended for 6 months the services of two prominent athletes agents, Rosa Associati and Volare Sports. Athletics Kenya President Isaiah Kiplagat told the Nairobi media on Tuesday that this is to enable them investigate any potential role the managers of these two entities may have had in failed doping tests that have ravaged Kenya's athletics image in recent months. Rosa Associati manages Rita Jepto, who is serving a 2-year ban for failing a dope test. The company also manages Kenya's World Women's 800-meter champion Eunice Sum and World Men's 1500-meter champion Asbel Kiprop, among other prominent Kenyan athletes, while Volare Sports manages current world marathon record holder Dennis Kimeto, two-time New York City marathon champion Geoffrey Mutai, and former world marathon record holder Wilson Kipsang, among others. Kipsang is an outspoken critic of Athletics Kenya President Isaiah Kiplagat.
Thanks, Mark. That's Mark Aluma of our Daybreak Africa radio show. Mark mentioned Wilson Kipsang and fellow Kenyan and world record holder Dennis Kimeto. They'll be two of the top contenders for the men's title at the London Marathon April 26th. Finally, a sunny side of sports salute to Ethiopian athlete Genzeba Dibaba, who was named Sportswoman of the Year Wednesday at the Laureus World Sports Awards in Shanghai, China. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny. And listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Friday, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 1730 hours UTC right here on the Voice of America. Well, coming up, a former UN humanitarian officer for Somalia says South Sudan can learn lessons from how the Somalis survived famine more than 20 years ago. And a review of the National Urban League's annual State of Black America report. First, let's listen to a little music. Here's Stella Nantieza of Uganda with Muita Molokozi.
Samanya,
Yes, that was Stella Nantieza with Muita Mulakozi. Well, a former UN humanitarian officer for Somalia says South Sudan can learn lessons from how the Somalis survived famine more than 20 years ago. Peter Tingwa says the government in Juba and international aid agencies should help farmers in areas that are not affected by the conflict to grow more food. He says South Sudanese farmers have the potential to feed the nation and avert famine. Tingwa tells reporter John Tanza that Somali farmers, with help from international aid agencies, are successfully providing enough food to feed their people.
Somalia broke into clans, and one clan was fighting the other. So people were not able to cultivate. Then the famine came in. And the thing with the famine is every year the production reduces. For example, if this year there was a war, next year there will be less indigenous production, and the year after another less. So that is how it went until serious starvation came.
Apart from the war and the natural calamities that contributed to Somalia's famine, what was happening in areas that were considered in Somalia as an agricultural belt?
Kismayo is at the mouth of the river, so the valley is very rich and bananas were produced there. And so many other valleys, the Jubo Valley, Chabele Valley, and then the Baidoa area, they are all productive, agricultural productive areas. But when there is war and people are running, then you cannot get the production. And the humanitarian community or the international community did respond, led by WFP. Food was brought to the port in Mogadishu, but it couldn't be taken inside. All the highways were roadblocks by militia who taxed the relief agencies. So the relief agencies were not able to go, and people were dying at hinterlands. This is the first time UN intervened into a country based on humanitarian things. UN has always intervened because of political things, military or fighting. But in Somalia at that time, the UN intervened in order to force open the ways so that food would go to the hinterlands where people were dying. So that was the situation. It was very bad.
After the famine, what did the Somalis do to help the situation of food security in that area?
Well, of course, at that time there was no Somalia government. So under Chapter 7, food was taken, whether the militia liked it or not. And the food distribution was combined with the giving of agricultural inputs like seeds and tools and fertilizers and so. So really, by 1993, Somalia had somewhat corrected the serious food shortage.
Are there lessons that South Sudan could learn from what happened in Somalia?
I think there are many ways we could overcome that. One, now that the international community is aware, the protagonists could agree so that corridors are open to people in need, so that food is taken there. Two, the war is not engulfing the whole of South Sudan. There are areas like, you take Western Equatoria or Yei or so. Those areas should be made to produce more so that food does not have to come from outside. The international community and our government could encourage production of food.
That was food analyst Peter Tingwa speaking with reporter John Tanza. The National Urban League has described this year's State of Black America report as a tale of two nations. The group's recently released annual report found that under an equality index, African Americans had only 72% parity compared to whites in education, economics, health, social justice, and civic engagement. It's a gap that educators and students at Brooklyn's Medgar Evers College are looking to close. VOA's Daniela Schreier reports from the school.
Medgar Evers College, whose student body is nearly 90% black, is filled with hardworking students fulfilling their degree requirements. But unlike their white peers, African Americans overall are statistically much more likely to be unemployed, according to findings from the 2015 State of Black America report by the National Urban League. Despite annual increases in high school graduation and college attendance rates, unemployment figures for blacks are as high as 20% in seven of the country's largest cities. The current national unemployment rate is 5.5%.
The recession is quote-unquote over, except that the recession is still raging in many urban communities.
The study links education and joblessness.
Y'all want to talk State of Black America?
Says Urban League President Mark Morial. He points to the 36% national proficiency gap between blacks and whites in math and reading as a major indicator of future inequality.
The United States must close the gaps, must close the achievement gap, must close the job gaps. It is essential to America's economic competitiveness in the 21st century.
Medgar Evers College, which hosted the report's release, is taking proactive steps to make sure graduates are ready for the workplace.
Thank you very much.
President Rudy Crew.
More and more, we're having everything from career days to a real focus on the networking, if you will, that it takes to basically not just, you know, enter your career, your chosen career, but really get the job that you want.
College senior Shemroy Primo interned with the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office to make himself a more attractive candidate for law schools. He says he was disappointed but not surprised by the study's finding.
But I mean, as a black man, you know, it's really hard out there, the job market and stuff. And as someone out, you know, in the high school in Brooklyn, East New York, so I have a lot of friends that are really looking up to me, and they're really proud of me because, you know, I've taken a different route. I went to college, and I'm a senior, I'm a rising senior. It's my last semester, and I plan to go to law school.
However, the Urban League study indicates there is still employment bias.
Well, one thing that was troubling is even when a black person and a white person had the same academic background, the unemployment rates seem to still be higher for black Americans. People ask me why, and I think it is the presence of still exclusion and discrimination in the workforce to some extent.
Because of this, Primo says he must work twice as hard to earn a spot in the workplace. Daniela Schreier, VOA News, Brooklyn, New York.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next is our VOA editorial. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer Bill Workinger and our engineer Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Department of State in early March recognized 10 women from around the globe with the Secretary of State's International Women of Courage Awards. They were honored for their outstanding contributions to peace, human rights, gender equality, and social progress. These are women who speak and act against injustice, inequality, and insecurity. Some work to improve their communities or to better the plight of women and children. Others forge a path for others to follow. They include journalists who expose crimes against women or ties between violent extremists and local organizations, advocates for human rights and peaceful reconciliation of conflict, founders of NGOs that help women succeed, or those that band women together to seek to redress injustice. One is a nurse who contracted Ebola while treating others for the disease, recovered, and returned to work. Another is Afghanistan's first female fixed-wing Air Force pilot. Women are more than victims, said Ambassador-at-Large for Global Women's Issues, Catherine Russell.
We know that women are also important agents of change in their country, that they do positive, courageous things every day, and we want that to be part of this narrative, too. We want to show that a woman, even a woman who hasn't been involved in politics, can have a huge impact on her country, and we've seen some of those nominees here today.
You need to have courage, first of all, not fear, said awardee Arbana Jara, a Kosovar journalist.
I'm a mom of two kids. Of course, I have to work 10 to 12 hours a day and having threats and all of it. But if you are determined to go on and just go after your dream, then just not being afraid.
Any person in the world can be a person of courage, said Ambassador Russell. You just have to take a challenge and address it as best you can.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, voanews.com/editorials.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, combating terrorism across the continent. From the Al-Shabaab militant massacre of nearly 100 university students in Kenya to the kidnapping of 600 schoolgirls by Boko Haram. Is Africa's war on terrorism winnable? That's next time, right here on VOA Africa.